Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, April 4th, 2024, the 1117th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So we're going to talk about some geopolitical happenings, maybe some devolution proofs. Ooh, conspiracy theories. Watch out. You wouldn't want to believe in any conspiracy theories. You can't totally prove them to people who don't know anything. Therefore, if you discuss them, it is a conspiracy theory. And if you think it's an unproven and dangerous conspiracy theory at some point, well, then it's going to be a dangerous and unproven conspiracy theory at all points forever, even if everything that happens in reality continues to map on to that view and understanding of our situation. And so we're going to discuss all of that in the context of the 75th birthday of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It is being widely celebrated all across the television today. Oh, glory! NATO started 75 years ago, and now the world has seen nothing but peace and prosperity ever since. I mean, honestly, hail NATO. I mean, hail NATO. Hail NATO. Yeah. I wasn't implying anything by using the German word. But I want to hit a couple things first, and let's get started with another anniversary. This morning, a tweet from Dan Scavino 1 year ago made its rounds on social media. Scavino, in that post, wrote, April 4th, 2023, the guardrails are off, a turning point in the United States of America. There is no going back. And a praying hands emoji, an American flag emoji, and an eagle emoji. So what anniversary is being commemorated here? This is from the New York Times. The number one story of the day from 1 year ago, Trump arrives in Manhattan to face criminal charges. Former President Donald Trump arrived at his Trump Tower residence in Manhattan on Monday, ahead of his expected Tuesday arraignment on criminal charges related to his alleged role in hush money payments to a porn star during his 2016 presidential campaign. Trump briefly waved to supporters gathered outside his building as he went inside. On Tuesday, he is due to surrender at the Manhattan Criminal Courts building, where he will be fingerprinted and formally charged under an indictment handed down by a grand jury that investigated the case. Mayor Eric Adams warned Trump's supporters, including far-right Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, to be on their quote-unquote best behavior while in New York for a planned pro-Trump rally. And so that was it. 1 year ago today, they crossed the Rubicon in New York, indicting the former president on obviously trumped-up charges, pun obviously intended, but really just pun unavoidable. And we are getting close to seeing that trial actually play out, or at least that is what we expect at this point. I could do an entire episode on Get Trump updates this week and was actually thinking of trying to do that. I'm not sure it's going to be possible. I'm also kind of a little hesitant to do it because it just keeps changing. We could do Get Trump updates every single day, talk about nothing else, and still fill up 1 hour a day for the podcast. I don't want to do that, obviously. We're kind of seeing the same cycles repeat over and over and over again in each one of these indictments. The attorneys bringing the indictments on behalf of the illegitimate Biden administration are being exposed for their own corruption and compromise. The cases are proving to be even more fake than anyone could have imagined a year ago. And I doubt there's anyone in my audience who needs convincing of either A, there is for as long as the Uniparty remains in control, a two-tiered system of justice, and B, that there is no way Trump is ultimately going down for any of this stuff, regardless of what the courts actually decide. We've seen Arthur Engoron simply decide that Trump owes New York $600 million for having a different opinion on how much his properties were worth a decade or more ago. And we've seen Trump on Monday put up a $175 million bond to be able to appeal that awful decision. But he will appeal and it'll be overturned. And the truth is, it doesn't really matter either way, because all that matters is the court of public opinion. And we discussed that a couple weeks ago. But that was the regime crossing the Rubicon. We have now indicted a former president. What we were told was a norm in our system of justice and our system of politics is no longer a norm. It's all fair play now. You want to indict political opponents? Claims about how that would tear our society asunder are no longer relevant. And the regime, the uniparty representation in the United States, they have no pushback available to them anymore when it is their side's turn to face justice. And you could make a very convincing argument that that alone is what this period is all about. So happy anniversary to the uniparty regime in the United States. Congratulations on giving Donald Trump and MAGA permission to prosecute each and every one of you to the absolute fullest extent of the law. We all wish you the best of luck defending yourself on those treason charges. Also, briefly, we have an exciting update from the world of social media. Elon Musk today seems to have launched an effort to finally purge bots from X, formerly Twitter, something people like me have been waiting For the entirety of the year and a half, he has now, quote unquote, owned Twitter. This was one of those promises made early that just seems to have never been implemented, kind of like the idea that Twitter would be a home for free speech. It is not that. It has not been that. It's sad that it's not that, because I'm not an Elon hater or anything like that. I think Elon may not only be a good guy, but one of the best good guys. Despite that, we do not need to lie and pretend that Twitter is a bastion of free speech. It's not. It's a lot like what we were discussing yesterday in terms of election integrity. It's either 100% or it's 0%. Either you have free speech or you don't. You don't have free speech up to a point with then a range of things that are not allowed to be discussed. That right there means free speech does not exist on the platform, period. Any lack of free speech necessarily distorts the public conversation, and this always happens to the advantage of the people with the most power and control, the people who would want to shut down free speech because that free speech threatens them. But that is only one of the major manipulations of free speech on that platform. Another is the effect and influence of these bots. They can make totally unpopular ideas seem really popular. They can make it seem like everyone is excited about a new product or a stock or a politician. They can make it seem like everyone believes that vaccines are very safe and effective, or that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, or that masks and lockdowns work. They can present the illusion of a consensus where not only does no consensus exist, but a consensus does exist in the opposite direction. They work to convince people that the false reality is actually real and true in reality prime. So Elon Musk is going after this. Many people are familiar with the British influencer Zuby. He wrote on X, formerly Twitter, this morning, X needs to fix the spam and porn bot problem. It's completely out of hand. To which Elon Musk responded, major purge is about to happen. And he followed that up soon after saying, system purge of bots and trolls underway. Please reply to me or X engineering if legitimate accounts are suspended. X Corp will be tracing the people responsible and bringing the full force of the law to bear upon them. And it will be extremely interesting to see how that progresses and develops, because we are talking about major organizations with a lot of money building these bot armies and using them to influence the public conversation in a way that provides them an undue advantage. So we'll see how that goes. It's expected that many high follower count accounts will be seeing their follower counts drop substantially. They have also made another change over on X, formerly Twitter, implementing something that Elon Musk had announced recently, the return of blue checks for what they determined to be influential users. Elon wrote in that tweet announcing it, going forward, all X accounts with over 2,500 verified subscriber followers will get premium features for free, and accounts with over 5,000 will get premium plus for free. So the accounts that have a lot of legitimate, real human followers who are either paying for or receive the blue check mark on Twitter, those more popular accounts will be given the premium features for free, and that will let everybody know these are legitimate verified accounts. So this is something to watch and observe, and we'll see the effect it has on the public conversation. So let's talk about the birthday of NATO, and you know how I love to get the official story from the central narrative so that we have something to work from. And there is no better place to get that official story than the World Economic Forum. They published an article today celebrating the birthday of NATO, 75 years of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization explained. So let's see what the good folks in Davos have to say about their American-funded and backed global police force. The army that goes around the world making sure that territories claimed by the global regime remain in global regime control, no matter what the people of those territories actually want. They note, by the way, that much of this article was originally published in July of 2022, but it has been updated to reflect today's circumstances and festivities. Today marks 75 years since the conception of NATO. Foreign ministers from member countries met in Brussels to mark the moment the alliance's founding treaty was signed on 4 April 1949 in Washington. NATO leaders are also set to meet in Washington on the 9th through the 11th of July for a bigger celebration. Ah, oh, that sounds great. 9/11 July in Washington for a NATO celebration? Well, that sounds even more exciting than turning on CERN on the day of the total eclipse. It's like these global communists are doing everything they can to open a portal to another dimension and watch the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man walk through. Reflecting on the impact of NATO, Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg remarked, "Never has a single document with so few words meant so much to so many people. So much security, so much prosperity, and so much peace." Last month, Sweden officially joined NATO as the 32nd ally in what Stoltenberg described as a historic day. Sweden will now take its rightful place at NATO's table with an equal say in shaping NATO policies and decisions, he said on the 7th of March. Sweden's accession makes NATO stronger, Sweden safer, and the whole alliance more secure. Today's accession demonstrates that NATO's door remains open and that every nation has the right to choose its own path, basically saying we will take whatever help we can get to put down this whole sovereign alliance, these countries that are really threatening our control and our global domination. We are absolutely horrified now that we have been exposed in Ukraine, we've been exposed in Israel, we've been exposed in Taiwan, and that's only going to get worse. We will take any help we can get. 2 days after the second anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the final hurdle in Sweden's path to joining the world's most powerful military bloc was cleared as Hungary approved its accession. Sweden is leaving 200 years of neutrality and military non-alignment behind, Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson told a press conference. "We are joining NATO in order to defend what we are and everything we believe in even better. We are defending our freedom, our democracy, our values, together with others." It comes less than a year after Sweden's neighbor, Finland, joined in April 2023, marking the biggest expansion of NATO since members joined from Eastern Europe after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So NATO is apparently stronger than ever. Joe Biden reunited the NATO allies following Russia's very brutal, uncalled for, totally illegitimate invasion of Ukraine. And now they've got Finland and Sweden in the mix. It just couldn't get any stronger or any better. I mean, they're certainly not good enough or strong enough to defeat Russia or China or really anybody at this point. The European countries barely have militaries, and the guy who everyone is pretending is president of the United States of America doesn't seem to have any control over our military. So what is NATO anyway? And, oh man, I shouldn't have said that. I don't want to sound negative, not on their 75th birthday. And let's skip down. Let's see what the WEF has to say about the history of NATO. NATO's history is tied to Russian expansionism. It was created in 1949 in response to then Premier of the USSR, Joseph Stalin's attempts to bring other states under communist rule. The US, Canada, the UK, Belgium, Denmark, France, Iceland, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, and Portugal signed a treaty stating that, quote, "an armed attack against one or more shall be considered an attack against them all," end quote. It has since gone through 9 rounds of enlargement. By the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, there were 16 countries. And in the 1990s, after the collapse of the USSR, former Soviet countries began joining, taking the total up to 30. Now that Sweden has officially joined, the number of allies totals 32. So when the Soviet Union broke up, former Soviet territories became NATO allies. It almost sort of sounds like the global regime decided that a whole bunch of formerly Russian land was now theirs and those would be the conditions of peace. All sides would agree that this is the right solution. We're going to have peace now. We won't mess with Russia. Russia won't mess with us. We've got these former territories in there kind of as a buffer zone. And since then, they have essentially gone into that buffer zone and removed the buffer aspect, pushing weapons and biomedical research labs right up to the Russian border. NATO has expanded considerably, encroaching on Russia. Now, there are globalists who will make the argument that that actually makes the West, quote unquote, much safer, and all of this is justified. In fact, it was necessary. But as you might suspect, Russia doesn't really see it that way, and that is the source of these problems we now face. The Madrid Summit Declaration in June 2022 reaffirmed NATO's open-door policy, which allows any European country to apply to join, but they must commit to defense spending of 2% of GDP. And that was Donald Trump who actually held these countries to that. In March 2020, the previous round of enlargement saw the Republic of North Macedonia join, while Georgia and Bosnia and Herzegovina are in the application process, now alongside Ukraine. In celebration of NATO's birthday, most of the mainstream media outlets put out the exact same article. The Los Angeles Times, ABC News, NBC News, all publishing on their websites the same article from the Associated Press. So that is as close to one singular official story as possible. I often use the phrase official story to describe what they pitch us as the underlying reality. All of the details are the same, but usually we see media outlets presenting all of that information in slightly different contexts and in slightly different ways, reflecting the voices and the viewpoints of their own outlets, corresponding to their own branding, based on the needs and tastes of their own target markets. But now we just have one story being reprinted by all the outlets. And it's not unusual. I'm not saying it's unusual for outlets to repost the Associated Press or to repost Reuters, one of the Wire news services. But I'm not sure I've ever seen it so blatant. Let's go to the Los Angeles Times. This is written by Lauren Cook and Matthew Lee. NATO marks its 75th birthday as Russia's war in Ukraine gnaws at its unity. Wait a second. I thought that they were stronger than ever. Terrible. That's the kind of thing that can really ruin a birthday. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to, says Jens Stoltenberg. That's not really in there. I'm just kidding around. NATO marked on Thursday 75 years of collective defense across Europe and North America, with its top diplomats vowing to stay the course in Ukraine as better-armed Russian troops assert control on the battlefield. The anniversary comes as the now 32-nation alliance weighs a plan to provide more predictable, longer-term military support to Ukraine. Plagued by ammunition shortages, Ukraine this week lowered the military conscription age from 27 to 25 in an effort to replenish its depleted ranks and appealed for additional air defenses to counter Russian ballistic missile attacks. So now Ukrainian Nazi battalions are more empowered to go door to door and take all the able-bodied men from their homes, send them out to the front lines where they can be immediately eviscerated by Russian drones and artillery. As we were told, those very brave Ukrainians want to defend their very sovereign borders, just not enough to have them actually volunteer to do so. They end up being pulled from their homes, kicking and screaming at gunpoint. But once they get through that process, then yes, they become very brave Ukrainian soldiers defending their very sovereign Ukrainian borders. It is totally a real country. I didn't want to spoil the birthday party for NATO, but I felt compelled to deliver a sobering message on behalf of Ukrainians about the state of Russian air attacks on my country, destroying our energy system, our economy, and killing civilians, said Ukraine Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba, who attended a meeting of the NATO-Ukraine Council. Oh, there's a NATO-Ukraine Council now. Thank goodness. Kuleba thanked the allies for agreeing to begin identifying Patriot missile battery stocks that could be sent to Ukraine. The Patriot, quote, is the only system that effectively intercepts ballistic missiles, he said. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, speaking before meeting with Kuleba, said that, quote, support for Ukraine, the determination of every country represented here at NATO, remains rock solid. We will do everything we can. Allies will do everything that they can to ensure that Ukraine has what it needs to continue to deal with Russia's ongoing aggression against Ukraine, aggression that is getting worse with every passing day. The fight that Ukraine has on its hands is not only Ukraine's fight, it's everyone's fight, because the aggression being committed by Russia is not only an aggression against Ukraine and its people, it's an aggression against the very principles that lie at the heart of the international system, Blinken said. And that is absolutely true. Now, Antony Blinken presents that as a bad thing, but they never actually explain why that's a bad thing. The people of the world don't actually want this international system. The only people that benefit from this system are those attempting to take power over every region of this world. NATO has been a global police force tasked with preserving the lines drawn on maps by the global regime after World War II. They ostensibly exist to prevent Russian aggression, but their actions actually increase the likelihood of Russian aggression, and NATO spends most of its time operating in regions of the world that do not qualify as North Atlantic nor anything to do with Russia. The article covers the details of the recent meetings. Let's skip down toward the end. Today, Ukraine also wants a seat at NATO's table, but the alliance works on unanimity, and there is no consensus on whether it should join. Most allies oppose membership while war rages on anyway. For now, NATO promises only that its door is open for Ukraine in the future. NATO allies cannot agree on whether to arm Ukraine either. As an organization, the alliance only provides non-lethal support like transport vehicles, fuel, combat rations, medical supplies, and demining equipment. However, many members provide arms and ammunition bilaterally or in groups. And of course, this sort of talk is always just a shell game. They divide up responsibilities so that each individual part has plausible deniability. No, someone else did that. Those are someone else's mercenaries there. That's someone else's intelligence. That is someone else's targeting for assassinations. That is someone else who committed XYZ terrorist attacks on the Crimean Bridge or on the Nord Stream or on the Russian theater. It's not us. It never would be us. It never could be us. Therefore, we bear no responsibility. The bulk of NATO's efforts since Russian troops began massing for the invasion has focused on reinforcing its own borders near Russia and Ukraine to dissuade Putin from targeting any of the allies next, as if that was going to happen. Article 5 was given perhaps its toughest test during Donald Trump's term as President of the United States, by far NATO's most powerful member country. Trump suggested the U.S. might not defend any NATO ally that failed to boost their own defense spending to at least 2% of gross domestic product, as all had agreed to do in 2014. Trump has repeated the threat during election campaigning this year. NATO predicts that 18 of its 32 members will reach that target this year, up from only 3 a decade ago. So about 10% of the countries were actually living up to their stated obligations, but the United States is supposed to provide funding, equipment, intelligence, and troops wherever the NATO alliance decides those are needed. We essentially have Team America World Police, but Team America isn't actually fighting for America. It's just the American side of that global regime doing whatever the global regime wants. People sometimes talk about the city-state theory, where there are these three global city-states, the Vatican, the spiritual center of this global empire, the City of London, which is the economic and banking center of the global empire, and then Washington, D.C., the city-state inside the United States of America, that is the military center of this global empire. NATO has made some news this week in regards to Ukraine and the expectations for the future. The Associated Press article mentioned Antony Blinken's comments. Here is Blinken.
Ukraine. the determination of every country represented here at NATO remains rock solid. We will do everything that we can, allies will do everything that they can, to ensure that Ukraine has what it needs to continue to deal with Russia's ongoing aggression against Ukraine, an aggression that gets worse with every passing day. Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward.
Of course, we believe that Ukraine deserves to be a member of NATO and that this should happen sooner rather than later.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness or duder El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, sir?
Employed?
You don't go out looking for a job dressed like that, do you? On a weekday?
What day is this?
Well, I do work, sir. So if you don't mind...
Well, I do mind. The dude minds. This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
This aggression will not stand, man. Antony Blinken trying to deliver that message to the world, trying to sound strong and confident and powerful while placing an between every other word and making threats that no one can really possibly take seriously at this point. So NATO turns 75, and rather than just celebrating NATO and saying happy birthday, everyone is asking them to do more. Please help Ukraine. It's all just public relations for more support being pushed behind the global regime's proxy state in Ukraine over land that is now just officially Russia. Now, the global regime refuses to recognize that fact. They're still pretending that they're going to return the Donbass to Ukraine and return Crimea to Ukraine. But the people in all of those regions just participated in the election for Russian President Vladimir Putin. They also already participated in the past voting in referenda to join Russia. It's all just part of Russia. And when you understand that, well, then you just have the global regime begging for help, welcoming in anyone they can get in an effort to push Russia out of Russia. That's not a defensive alliance. That is an army attempting to override the will of the people. And at some point, you have to wonder if that's what it's always been. They exist to enforce the lines, the border lines drawn on maps by the global regime in the aftermath of World War II and little else. We constantly hear the whining and complaining, the panicking over the fact that Donald Trump might destroy NATO. He might break NATO apart. Oh, we should be so lucky. But I know, Donald Trump isn't president and he may never be president again. But he also might be, and you know who thinks he will be is NATO. This is Bloomberg from yesterday. NATO proposes $100 billion five-year fund to support Ukraine. NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg is proposing to establish a fund of allied contributions worth $100 billion over 5 years for Ukraine as part of a package for alliance leaders to sign off when they gather in Washington in July. Allies are still discussing Stoltenberg's proposal and any mechanics of the accounting, including whether to factor in bilateral aid to Ukraine into the overall sum, according to people familiar with the discussions. They note that this proposal would need the approval of all of the 32 allies, but skipping ahead. As part of the package, NATO could also take over the operational duties of the U.S.-led Ukraine Contact Defense Group, which coordinates weapons deliveries by about 50 countries to Ukraine, said the people. Just the people. Anonymous people who are telling Bloomberg what it is NATO thinks and wants. This article, for the record, does not sound as though it's written by a human. With NATO's supreme allied commander, General Chris Cavoli, in charge, such a step could protect the structure from any political change that may result after the November elections. So they are already taking steps to prepare for the inevitability of Donald Trump. The prospect of Donald Trump's return has triggered increased talk among allies about what Europe should do to ensure the U.S. is invested in transatlantic security. It's also raised concerns among European officials that Trump could withdraw U.S. aid to Ukraine in light of comments that he'd seek to end the war in a day. And of course, that is true as well. They can talk all they want about 32 allies continuing their mission in Ukraine. But the moment Donald Trump says, yeah, we're not going to pay for that anymore and we're not going to involve ourselves in that anymore, it's just over. If allies back Stoltenberg's proposal, a move by NATO to take a more active role in aid for Ukraine would mark a paradigm shift for the military alliance, which has previously distanced itself from those efforts to avoid being potentially drawn into a wider war with Russia. And this is how they've continued to present themselves for over 2 years now. But they are provoking this entire conflict. They provoked this conflict from the beginning. Naturally, they pretend it's the other way around. They deny that they have been waging an ethnic civil war in the eastern quarter of Ukraine against Russian-speaking Slavs and reframe it instead as Putin's very brutal invasion. We know they have Nazi battalions there, funded, trained, armed, directed by the CIA, as reported in the New York Times, by the way. It's not a conspiracy theory. But they say Putin's lying when he says to the world, we are denazifying and demilitarizing these psychopaths who are doing the dirty work of the global regime. None other than Victoria Nuland admits to the existence of U.S. Defense Department-funded biolabs in the eastern portions of Ukraine. But if we say it, it's a conspiracy theory. And that's fine. We know the rules. If we ever disagree with anything they say, it's a conspiracy theory. It's misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. We get it. Back to the article. Yet institutionalizing NATO's support could signal allies' commitment to Ukraine for the long term, at a time when Russian President Vladimir Putin is betting he can outlast the Kyiv allies, especially as members are unlikely to extend a formal invitation to Ukraine to join the alliance when leaders gather in early July in Washington. So they're essentially telling you that's not going to happen. We're going to tell the world it will happen so that it seems like Ukraine is part of NATO, even though it's not, but it's not going to happen. And without that, all the talk of defending Ukraine is pretty impotent. While having NATO lead discussions about aid to Ukraine might insulate it from U.S. politics, LOL, it could subject the discussions to infighting between the alliance's 32 members, including with Turkey and Hungary, taking more nuanced stances in support of Ukraine. So NATO is trying to get $100 billion from its allied nations before Donald Trump returns to power. We are being told that Donald Trump is exceedingly unpopular, that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, and since becoming fake president, has done an amazing job of implementing the global regime agenda, all to the great pride and glory of the American people. They love what Joe Biden is doing. They are just amazed at Joe Biden's ability to get things done in office in terms of pushing that agenda forward, despite the fact that no one wants him to do it. And he does all of this while censoring and propagandizing and persecuting the American people if they happen to disagree with this global regime agenda. He gets the job done while seemingly having no idea what's happening around him, exercising no proven real authority, and being surrounded with utter incompetence. Somehow, he's still able to get things done, as though everyone holding any measure of ostensible power is part of the same group of people executing the same agenda along with him, no matter what it is they say about that agenda. We can watch all of the drama play out within the controlled opposition dynamic, while also observing that both sides of the Uniparty, the Uniparty left and the Uniparty right, are consistently working together to push all of that agenda forward, which then the fake president signs into illegitimate law that, truthfully, none of us have to obey whatsoever. They do not govern with the will and consent of the American people. They never have. Our elections are illegitimate. The laws and rules and regulations and policies they're attempting to put in place are repugnant to the Constitution, and therefore, according to our own Supreme Court, they are void. But the people are still too scared to actually say that, much less refuse to comply with what is demanded of them. And hopefully, as we go through this year, people's strength and courage will grow, their understanding of the government's pure illegitimacy will grow with it, and then it won't matter what we are told by the television and what we are told by all of these illegitimate politicians. The answer will be no, just no. Or as Elon Musk says,
go fuck yourself. But go fuck yourself. Is that clear?
It's really simple. We can see the man behind the curtain. We can see the weakness of the man behind the curtain. We can see the incompetence of the man behind the curtain. Why would you continue to pretend that they hold legitimate power over you? They don't. So the global regime is preparing for the inevitability of Trump's return, and the illegitimate Biden administration, to the extent that they are able to control anything, is attempting to do the same. Fox News put out this article today. I just want to spend a second on this. Biden administration rule makes firing federal workers harder as Trump promises deep state revamp. President Biden's administration is implementing a new rule to make it more difficult to fire federal workers as former President Trump promises to revamp the workforce to weed out the deep state. Early Thursday, the White House released a statement from the Democratic incumbent president regarding the, quote, final rule to protect nonpartisan civil servants. And nonpartisan, civil, and servants are all kind of just Orwellian doublespeak at this point. Biden said his administration was announcing, quote, protections for 2.2 million career civil servants from political interference to guarantee that they can carry out their responsibilities in the best interest of the American people. They have never done that. Day in and day out, career civil servants provide the expertise and continuity necessary for our democracy to function. We don't have a democracy. They provide Americans with life-saving and life-changing services and put opportunity within reach for millions. That's why, since taking office, I have worked to strengthen, empower, and rebuild our career workforce. And this is all from the Biden statement. The other day, remember, Biden let us know that he's not really responsible for these kinds of things. He doesn't do these statements, and everybody already knows that. The Office of Personnel Management, the government's chief human resources agency, on Thursday implemented new regulations barring career civil servants from being reclassified as political appointees or as other at-will workers who are more easily dismissed from their jobs. It comes in response to Schedule F, an executive order Trump issued in 2020 that sought to allow for reclassifying tens of thousands of the 2.2 million federal employees and thus reduce their job security protections, according to the Associated Press. Now, the problem that the illegitimate administration is attempting to solve here on behalf of the Uniparty, as it represents the global regime in America, he doesn't want this entrenched deep state, the administrative state, to be removed under a different president. He wants to make sure that the duly elected president of the United States has his hands tied in removing the deep state and the administrative state that are responsible for so many of the problems and so many of the violations of not only the U.S. Constitution, but of the personal liberty of the American people. Donald Trump, as the duly elected representative of the people, tasked with leading the executive branch of our government, should not, in their view, have the ability to remove federal employees who refuse to implement his agenda that he was elected to implement. And when I say elected, I am hoping, obviously, that we have legitimate elections in this country. because we are consistently facing the argument that Joe Biden was elected to implement all that he is implementing, except he wasn't elected. There's absolutely no reason whatsoever to believe that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes or anything close to that. I will be absolutely shocked to find out that Joe Biden got anything more than 50 million votes tops. And I really do have a suspicion that we will still get those final 2020 numbers, or at least something more closely resembling a legitimate result. Biden nullified Schedule F upon taking office, but if Trump were to revive it during a second administration, he could dramatically increase the around 4,000 federal employees who are considered political appointees and typically change with each new president. How many employees might have been affected by Schedule F is unclear. The article goes on. I encourage you to take a look at that if you like. Now, the fact that this is happening is clear and obvious proof of two things that we are told we are crazy and or conspiracy theorists for believing. One, that Donald Trump, being once again publicly recognized as the president of the United States of America, is an inevitability. And two, the deep state absolutely exists. The entrenched administrative state is very, very real. Joe Biden, the uniparty representative of that global regime, or at least so we are told, and his fake administration are making it quite clear to everyone that they intend to keep the federal bureaucracy in place no matter what. That is one of their most important goals. They have spent decades creating this federal bureaucracy that allows them to run everything without ever having to pass laws. It continues to coalesce power in the federal government that should be left to the states. And they have created avenues so that these federal agencies in this entrenched bureaucracy are able to direct how the American people and how American companies are able to go about their lives or about their business. So think about these last two stories alone, just these last two stories. The deep state is real. The global regime is real. And both the deep state and the global regime believe not only that Trump is inevitable, but also that he represents an existential threat to both. So let's talk about some other conspiracy theories that just so happen to map almost perfectly onto reality all the time for years in a row now, which means it's almost impossible for them to not have anything to them whatsoever. But I know the mainstream media hasn't admitted yet that it's true. And some people out there think it's very, very dangerous. So we're not allowed to talk about it. Otherwise, other people might not do the things that we want them to do. So therefore, it's dangerous that we talk about it at all. And of course, I'm talking about devolution. Now, if you're not familiar with the theory of devolution, you really owe it to yourself to go ahead and learn about it. This is the theory presented and evidenced by my good friend John Harold, otherwise known as Patel Patriot. You can find all of it at devolution.link. You are probably aware that I am one of the co-hosts of the Saturday night edition of Devolution Power Hour, where we discuss world events through the lens of devolution. And while John would describe it most accurately, I kind of describe it in my own way. And if you're not familiar with it, the short version is essentially that we don't believe there is any way that Donald Trump watched our election be stolen and simply gave up and walked away and left the country to ruin under an illegitimate usurper of a president. And there is some evidence to support that idea. In fact, there is a wealth of evidence to support that idea and extensive documentation. Now, it's not enough to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt to the most skeptical people, and that's just fine because nothing in the world actually qualifies under those conditions. It is my personal belief that something else beyond what we are presented by the mainstream media is definitely happening, and that John's theory and the evidence he provides are the best explanation I am aware of. There is absolutely a chance that it might never be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. It might never be admitted to simply because the existence of this process, if it is real, presents a whole range of new moral and intellectual problems that a great many people are simply not prepared to deal with, including anyone who might be considered a normie. It is also true that many people on our side, and I mean legitimately on our side, think that this entire thing is silly. They think that there is absolutely no way that anything else is going on. But again, I find that idea preposterous. John presents a number of executive orders, a number of actions taken late in the Trump administration that suggest something else is going on, and that his framework is not only entirely plausible, but indeed the best explanation for what is going on behind the scenes. We shall see in the future. Again, personally, I see this devolution operation, to the extent that it is correct and correctly described, as a backstopping. It is not a full control over everything that is happening. It is like a little playpen you might put a toddler in. The toddler is free to do what the toddler wants inside that playpen. They're just not able to get out of it. And this would explain why so often the illegitimate administration looks like it has absolutely no access to intelligence. They have no better an idea of what's happening in the world than the mainstream media tells them. They seem to have virtually no ability to command the military. And beyond their ability to provide public relations for whenever the global regime bankers need to print new fiat money and condition that money printing on the backs of the American workers, they really don't seem to have any other power whatsoever. They can get up on television, tell us what they think, and tell us how they're solving racism and sexism and transphobia and Islamophobia and anti-Semitism and whatever else. They're really not able to get a whole lot done. They have maintained their global money laundering operation, and that is about it. Even when it comes to that stuff, we're talking about debt numbers so high that they will absolutely never be repaid, in addition to the fact that the dollar is meant to collapse as the global regime's fiat bankers attempt to shift the whole world onto their central bank digital currencies. So let's go through a few stories, and as we do, consider the fact that the illegitimate Biden administration has virtually no role in what we see happening. And let's start with immigration. This is Todd Bensman from the Center for Immigration Studies on War Room yesterday with Natalie Winters sitting in for Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I came into Juarez, Mexico on Sunday and have been down in the area on the east and west side of the city, and now I'm about an hour and a half south in the state of Chihuahua, reporting on the state of the Biden Obrador crackdown on the flows going to the Texas border, because, you know, we've talked about this before. I've been on your show. There is a secret diplomatic deal. We don't know exactly what was horse traded in that deal, but Lopez Obrador is indeed cracking down in a mighty way all over at least Chihuahua State, and definitely Coahuila State too, which is across from Eagle Pass, to slow the flow down of migration entering into Texas mainly, and also New Mexico. Now, they are still reaching the border and crossing, but the numbers that we were seeing in October, November, December, 10,000, 11,000, 12,000, 14,000, 15,000 a day are way, way down to, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 a day. And in my opinion, this is all about optics for the election, 2024 election. I heard Monica just talking about, you know, the polling and how this is a major campaign issue. The Biden campaign realizes this and came down and cut these deals with the Mexican president, which, by the way, he could have cut 3 years ago, because this works. Trump showed that this worked when he was in office and cut this same deal. Said, listen, you know, we're gonna bash you with progressive trade tariffs if you don't get on the stick here and shut this down. And he did. Significantly. Now Biden is doing it for his own reelection bid, and it is working because it's effective.
So the illegitimate president, Joe Biden, who has facilitated and enabled the global slave trade to continue over the last 3.5 years, to the extent that he's able to do anything, and to the extent that it is being properly reported to us, he has now reached a secret diplomatic deal with AMLO, the president of Mexico, to have Mexican authorities stop the immigration problem on the southern side of the border. A Donald Trump policy that Joe Biden, in quotes, is bringing back into effect along with the Mexican president. Benzman theorizes he's doing that for his own reelection chances. And that is the standard normie take. We are in an election year. We have these elections. Whether or not the votes are properly counted, we still have elections. And we still have to pretend that the reported results of those elections are real and matter, even when they're not real. And we are also supposed to pretend that a duly elected president, understanding that our elections are not real and watching the election theft happen in real time from a skiff, just doesn't bother doing any of it. He just hands the country over and its fate over to the illegitimate president, the usurper Joe Biden. So there is a secret diplomatic deal where AMLO begins to re-implement the policy he agreed to implement under Donald Trump. It's just Joe Biden doing it. It's not Donald Trump doing it. It's not Donald Trump. It's just Joe Biden doing it. But last year, it was reported that the illegitimate regime's State Department is not even in conversations with Mexican officials. And we know that, for instance, the fake president, Joe Biden, has not talked to Vladimir Putin. At any point in this conflict, the most powerful man in the world, who received 81 million real lawful American votes, is not even talking to the leader of this adversarial nation, but is out there pretending that he's going to launch a nuclear war. Biden is reported to have recently spoken with Xi Jinping after being virtually ignored by that world leader for a long time. Joe Biden got totally disrespected when he went to Saudi Arabia. We'll talk about them in just a minute. Joe Biden is not taken seriously by any other world leader anywhere unless that world leader is an asset of the global regime. And at some point, people might ask themselves why that is. Why are all these sovereign world leaders who are clearly disconnected from that global regime and its agenda, why do they ignore and disrespect Joe Biden? Why don't they believe that Joe Biden is a real, legitimate American president? I've said many times, do you think, ask yourself, do you think there is any chance that Xi Jinping or Vladimir Putin, with their intelligence agencies, their access to information, which is far better than the access to information of the New York Times or of CNN or even of the illegitimate president Joe Biden, do any of them believe for a second that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes? Of course not. They know that didn't happen. But we are supposed to believe that the Biden administration, who is cut off from communications with many world leaders, including our neighbors to the south, his illegitimate regime created this secret diplomatic deal that re-implemented Trump policies and Trump deals with AMLO in order to get Joe Biden some extra votes and guarantee his re-election. Clown show. And let's add another wrinkle. Think about the unipartisan compromise. This is the major spending package that was supposed to be passed with the continuing resolutions and the budget deals, the extension till this September that has been pushed through by Mike Johnson. That was meant to include the unipartisan compromise, and it didn't. The unipartisan compromise, of course, was the funding for the fake foreign proxy wars in Ukraine, in Israel, and in Taiwan. And the Republicans, the uniparty right at least, would get in return their border security package, the greatest bipartisan border security package that has ever existed. That was meant to supply the uniparty and its globalist allies with the funding they needed to further implement their agenda. At the border, that meant increasing surveillance, particularly through technology. They would then redirect that surveillance toward the American people rather than those illegal aliens at the southern border. They also wanted funding and personnel to be able to facilitate the entry of those illegal aliens into the United States of America. We were told that that would solve the problems down at the southern border that they also had decided to just begin alerting us about like 6 months ago, despite the fact that it's been happening for years and in truth, decades, aside from that brief period when Donald Trump was the duly elected American president, publicly recognized throughout his first term. But the border security package passed with bipartisan support, that was going to solve our border problems. And it was supposed to get passed within the past few weeks. Then they would announce, hey, guys, everybody, our border problems have been solved. Well, we can see how the border problem is being solved. It's being solved on the Mexican side by AMLO implementing a deal he made with Donald Trump during Trump's first term. That is what is actually shutting down the border, because they are actually preventing people from crossing. They're not just surveilling people. They're not staffing offices to facilitate the entry of illegal aliens. The Mexicans on that side are cutting off the flow. But let's imagine the world where the unipartisan compromise was passed and Joe Biden signed it into law. Well, that would have happened a few weeks ago. And now we would be getting news about how the problems at the border have been solved by that unipartisan compromise. The illegitimate Biden regime would take credit, and the uniparty right would take credit. Think about the members of the uniparty right who went out and pushed for that border security package. Think about Chip Roy, for instance, a major DeSantis simp and supporter. A guy who has loudly and aggressively gone after Trump's supporters. The guy talks a big game and presents himself as a very bold and proud and principled conservative. He would be taking victory laps right now. Look at that, our unipartisan compromise, it solved the border problems. And why would they do that? Well, because this measure was already put in place. And the timing of it was already put in place, and they would know that sort of thing. Any secret diplomacy that happened here was clearly not done by the illegitimate Biden administration. They wanted the border problem because, first of all, they profit from the global slave trade. They were looking to better facilitate that global slave trade. But they didn't get any of that done, and lo and behold, the border problem is being solved on the Mexican side. We are told, as a result of a secret diplomatic deal, there is absolutely no way that's possible. It doesn't align with their agenda. It doesn't align with the series of events leading up to this. And there is no reason to believe that Joe Biden's illegitimate administration is in contact with AMLO or working on this problem with the Mexican government at all. Donald Trump consistently calls AMLO his friend. He often says, well, he's a socialist, but he's a good man and a friend of mine. Who got that deal done? Are we going to pretend that the illegitimate President Joe Biden made that deal? He directed Anthony Blinken to go down there and make that deal? Well, Anthony Blinken hasn't gone down there and made a deal. But let's move on to Saudi Arabia. This is the New York Times yesterday from the A-Team, Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan. The headline, Trump spoke recently with Saudi leader. Former President Donald J. Trump spoke recently with Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler, Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Their first publicly disclosed conversation since Mr. Trump left office in January 2021, according to two people briefed on the discussion who were not authorized to speak publicly about it. Now, you got to love them calling Mohammed bin Salman a de facto ruler, as if there is some challenge to that out there that requires the additional qualification de facto ruler. But Trump is speaking to a foreign ruler. A foreign ruler who treats Joe Biden with blatant disrespect, as though he is not the president of the United States of America at all. And of course, in Mohammed bin Salman's eyes, Joe Biden is not the president of the United States of America. Joe Biden is also just not the president of the United States of America. He didn't win an election. He is not a duly elected president. He is not a properly certified or inaugurated president. There is nothing about Joe Biden's quote unquote presidency that is legitimate. Not one thing. Sooner or later, you would think that people would just accept the reality of that. It has been obvious from day one. But let's continue with the New York Times. It was unclear what the two men discussed and whether it was their only conversation since Mr. Trump's departure from the White House. Neither representatives for Mr. Trump nor an official of the Saudi government responded to requests for comments. So the New York Times reporters, these very astute reporters, their A-team, Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan, they don't know if Donald Trump and Mohammed bin Salman have talked in the last few years. But they might have. So here's the thing. Why isn't Donald Trump, the man facing 91 indictments, which isn't even 91 anymore, it's 88, but 91 indictments, that man, the man whose national security advisor, Michael Flynn, was run out of his office for what was said to be a violation of the Logan Act, why isn't the illegitimate administration, who is bringing all of these very real indictments down on Donald Trump, why aren't they trying Donald Trump under the Logan Act for conducting American business with foreign leaders when he is not, quote unquote, authorized to do so? Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird that Donald Trump is just allowed to go around the world talking to foreign leaders about American foreign policy when we already have a real legitimate president in Joe Biden, who is maybe the greatest president ever, certainly the most popular with 81 million real lawful American votes? Why isn't Joe Biden conducting these foreign policy discussions with the leader who gives him a fist bump? Back to the article. But news of their discussion comes at a time when the Biden administration is engaged in delicate negotiations with the Saudis aimed at establishing a lasting peace in the Middle East, building on diplomatic ties between Israel and a number of Arab states forged through the work of the Trump administration. Oh, man. So the Biden administration is engaged in talks to maintain the peace that Donald Trump gained through the Abraham Accords, while Donald Trump is also talking to Saudi Arabia. Biden is again trying to implement a Trump policy, hopefully, while Trump is also talking to them. Which one between Joe Biden and Donald Trump do you think Mohammed bin Salman believes to be the president and leader of the United States of America? It's not Joe Biden. But I get it. I get it. Mohammed bin Salman is probably also a conspiracy theorist for acting as though Donald Trump put some sort of plan in place like devolution or something. I mean, that can't be true. Just ask all the normies in Con Inc. media who supported Ron DeSantis. They're the ones who really know what's going on. If President Biden manages to clinch a trilateral mega deal, which would probably include a Saudi-Israeli peace agreement, an Israeli commitment to a two-state solution, a U.S.-Saudi defense treaty, and U.S.-Saudi understandings on a civilian nuclear program in Saudi Arabia, he will need support from two-thirds of senators to ratify the U.S.-Saudi treaty. Mr. Trump, as the presumptive Republican nominee in firm command of his party, could potentially either block any deal or greenlight it for congressional Republicans. But have no doubt, it is definitely, definitely Joe Biden's deal. The illegitimate Biden administration, led by the illegitimate President Joe Biden, who receives fist bumps and disrespect from Mohammed bin Salman and is told to kick rocks when he asks for oil, that Joe Biden has set up a trilateral mega deal that's going to ensure Middle East peace. That is what we are being told in the esteemed pages of the New York Times. Look at Joe go. Mr. Trump has other reasons to maintain warm relations with Prince Mohammed. The former president and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law and former senior White House advisor, established close ties with the crown prince while in office and have capitalized on that goodwill in their private businesses since leaving government. Saudi Arabia was the first stop on Mr. Trump's first foreign trip as president, a sign of the value Mr. Trump placed on the relationship. Mr. Trump pursued major deals with the Saudis, including arms sales, and he defended Prince Mohammed at his moment of greatest international pressure after the CIA concluded that the crown prince had ordered the killing of the dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Oh, the CIA concluded that. And all of the mainstream newspapers, all of the regime mouthpieces in America, they went along and amplified the CIA's conclusion. But does that mean that Mohammed bin Salman killed and dismembered Jamal Khashoggi? No, it doesn't mean that at all. And you're insane if you believe that that is what happened. They have continued to use that as a way of undermining and delegitimizing Mohammed bin Salman on the world stage. And that's all that is. They are not telling the truth this time. 9 months after the killing, Mr. Trump called Prince Mohammed a friend of mine and praised the spectacular job he had done in liberalizing Saudi Arabia's laws, including allowing women to drive. While still in office, Mr. Trump told the journalist Bob Woodward that, quote, "I saved his ass," end quote, when Prince Mohammed was under intense criticism from officials in the U.S. Congress. "I was able to get Congress to leave him alone. I was able to get them to stop," Mr. Trump added. For his part, Mr. Biden promised during his 2020 campaign to treat Prince Mohammed as a quote-unquote pariah because of the killing of Mr. Khashoggi. Once in office, however, he concluded that it was unsustainable to sideline the Saudi crown prince, and his team has sought to mend the fractured relationship. But they haven't mended the fractured relationship. Joe Biden is treated with utter contempt and disrespect on the world stage by any leader who actually maintains their own sovereign power. Any leader who is not a puppet of the global regime treats Biden with the disrespect he deserves. Joe Biden is illegitimate. Joe Biden is a usurper. Joe Biden, for all intents and purposes, is not a real president, and history will record it that way. Since leaving the presidency, Mr. Trump has made use of his Saudi connections. At the same time as he was preparing to announce his presidential campaign in November 2022, the Trump Organization was putting the final touches on a deal with the Omani government and a Saudi firm for a multi-billion dollar Trump-branded real estate development in Oman. Mr. Trump has also worked with Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund to host the Saudi-backed Live Golf Tour at some of his golf courses. So Trump and Saudi Arabia have worked together to create an alternative to the PGA, because the PGA, like the other professional sports leagues in America, are all working in concert with that global regime, as are their many corporate sponsors. But let's continue. Mr. Kushner has benefited from Prince Mohammed's support on an even larger scale. Only 6 months after leaving government, Mr. Kushner's investment firm, Affinity Partners, secured $2 billion from Saudi Arabia's public investment fund in what was described in internal documents as a quote-unquote strategic relationship with Mr. Kushner. A panel of advisors to the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund had recommended against investing with Mr. Kushner, citing his lack of experience, but Prince Mohammed overruled them. The Saudi crown prince is not the only foreign leader with whom Mr. Trump has engaged recently. Last month, he hosted Prime Minister Viktor Orban of Hungary at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida for a meeting, the second they have held in the last 2 years. A person close to Mr. Trump said it was Mr. Orban who sought the meeting. At some of his rallies, Mr. Trump has lauded Mr. Orban, who has been criticized for eroding democratic institutions in Hungary, as an admirably strong leader. So the leaders of the countries that we might refer to as members of this sovereign alliance, as we witness the emergence of this multipolar world order, they are all aligned with the Trump agenda. They do not, for the most part, talk to Joe Biden. They do not pay respect to his administration in any way at all. They simply align with Donald Trump, and they talk to Donald Trump. And while this illegitimate administration is trying to imprison Trump and make sure that he can never be president again, he is out there conducting the business of American foreign policy with sovereign foreign leaders, and the illegitimate administration is unable to stop him. And they are not trying to indict him for any of this. Why aren't they pursuing Trump under the Logan Act? Why isn't the mainstream media talking about trying Trump under the Logan Act? He is out there in full view of the public, as reported in our mainstream outlets. He is out there talking to these foreign leaders, conducting American foreign policy, and they're not saying a word about it. They are pretending Donald Trump engaged in a conspiracy to overthrow the American government on the basis that he is just making it all up about our stolen elections. They are willing to attempt to jump through that hoop, but they don't have a damn thing to say when he is out there meeting with sovereign foreign leaders. That alone should suggest that something else has to be going on. But nope, it can't be. That's a conspiracy theory. Only the crazy people would consider that. We are going to have to side with the television until we have firm, hard evidence and all of the parties on all sides admit, yeah, that's what was happening the whole time. People's standards for believing in the official story within the central narrative as their default understanding of what's happening in the world are so low. And then engaging in the total inversion within the false reality, they apply an absurd standard of proof to believe that anything else might be happening. Nothing needs to be proven by anyone for them to accept by default the official story, but overriding the official story requires absolute hard evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt and admission by all parties before that can be accepted. And not even just accepted, even to be entertained. Consider what the normie mindset has wrought on our country. Now, staying in the Middle East, consider one of the most embarrassing moments of this fake presidency, this strange period that we are all being forced to endure, hopefully, for the ultimate betterment of our nation. But that ultimate embarrassing moment, the disaster that we were told happened in the Afghanistan withdrawal. Now, I am not doubting in any way that some element of global regime intelligence or one of its partner terrorist organizations legitimately did kill, very sadly, 13 American military personnel. I am not questioning that at all here. But the rest of that Afghanistan scenario should absolutely be viewed as an object of extreme skepticism. Think about the main piece of visual content we were given representing what happened over there. It was that massive American military jet taking off with Afghan men and women hanging off the plane as it took off into the air, and then they would fall from a mile up. Oh, it wasn't a good idea to hang on to the landing gear of a military jet escaping a country that was about to turn into a war zone? That wasn't smart. Whoops. But that's not even the most ridiculous part of that video. The most ridiculous part is that some effeminate teenage Afghan boy is running along, just waving his hands and smiling as the plane rolls down the tracks. People hanging off the landing gear and back. Oh, we've got to escape Kabul. This is the last plane out. While this little dude is just waving his hands and grinning. That alone should have made people suspicious, in the same way that paragliding go-karts should make people suspicious. But people require absolute, hardcore evidence, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, to even question a story like that. Why? I can only assume it's because people are retarded. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to think that all of these Afghan people are so desperate to get out of Kabul that they are willing to hang off the wheels and wings of a military jet as it takes off. But it's actually even worse than that, because it wasn't the last plane out. Planes just kept leaving and taking people out of Kabul. And who was being removed? Oh, all of the global regime assets who had been installed in the Afghan government that we were told was going to be very democratic. Oh, it was going to protect the women. But that was just a global proxy. The Afghan people didn't want that. And control of the country was returned to the Taliban. They were left with Bagram and something like $80 billion worth of American military equipment and supplies. Check out what Joe Biden said about that today.
Did a failure in Afghanistan? Mistakes? There was a report on Afghanistan withdrawal saying there was failure, mistakes. Do you admit there was mistakes during the withdrawal? And before?
No, all the evidence is coming back there. Remember what I said about Afghanistan? I said Al-Qaeda would not be there.
I said it wouldn't be there. I said we'd get help from the Taliban. What's happening now? What's going on? Read your press. I was right. Thanks.
So Joe Biden is walking out of a press conference. He usually ignores all the questions. He heard this one about the Afghanistan withdrawal, and so he decided to answer it. He came back to the podium, whispered all creepy, and said that he had told everybody that Al-Qaeda wouldn't be there and we would get help from the Taliban. Does anyone remember being told that Joe Biden's big plan was that we were going to be getting help from the Taliban? I don't remember that, but I do remember being told that the Taliban was a terrorist organization by the members of the American Uniparty, by the members of the global regime here in America, of which Joe Biden is absolutely one. I was told that the Taliban was a terrorist organization. But then again, those same people call all of us domestic terrorists. Now, we know that the people of Afghanistan did not want to be governed and ruled by the global regime using Afghanistan as a proxy, mostly to facilitate the global opium trade, while US and NATO forces guard it. So the people wanted the global regime out. That's what they got in the Afghanistan withdrawal. Regardless of who is responsible for murdering the 13 American soldiers, we know for a fact that the CIA used a drone to blow up an Afghan family in their car. And we know that the Taliban is now in control and Joe Biden is framing that as a good thing. Does that sound like something that Joe Biden set up? Or does it sound like something that someone else set up? That guy who wants countries to govern themselves and wants to remove the global regime and the American presence within that global regime from all these sovereign nations. Who's doing that? But let's keep going. Let's go to a former global regime proxy state, Iran. This is the New York Times a couple weeks back. This is March 15th, 2024. Iran and U.S. held secret talks on proxy attacks and ceasefire. Iran and the United States held secret indirect talks in Oman in January. Oh, that's that place that Donald Trump and Saudi Arabia are doing that deal. Addressing the escalating threat posed to Red Sea shipping by the Houthis in Yemen, as well as the attacks on American bases by Iran-backed militias in Iraq, according to Iranian and U.S. officials familiar with the discussions. The secret talks were held on January 10th in Muscat, the capital of Oman, with Omani officials shuffling messages back and forth between delegations of Iranians and Americans sitting in separate rooms. The delegations were led by Ali Bagheri Khani, Iran's deputy foreign minister and chief nuclear negotiator, and Brett McGurk, President Biden's coordinator for the Middle East. The meeting, first reported by the Financial Times this week, and this is, again, the middle of March, was the first time Iranian and American officials had held in-person negotiations, albeit indirectly, in nearly 8 months. Now, that is weird, isn't it? Why isn't the illegitimate Biden administration solving problems by talking to our global adversaries, particularly when those same global adversaries are being blamed for supporting so-called terrorist attacks in places like our allied nation, Israel? American officials said Iran requested the meeting in January and the Omanis strongly recommended that the United States accept. Since the beginning of the war in Gaza after Hamas's October 7th attacks on Israel, their 9/11, by the way, the United States and Iran have reassured each other that neither was seeking a direct confrontation, a stance conveyed in messages as they passed through intermediaries. But in Oman, each side had a clear request of the other, according to U.S. and Iranian officials. So now we are about to get the official story. This is what needs to happen from the global regime perspective. Washington wanted Iran to rein in its proxies to stop the Houthi attacks on ships in the Red Sea and the targeting of American bases in Iraq and Syria. Now, that is what we have been reported this whole time as a justification for different instances of escalation by the Americans. Remember when the Americans were attacking different Iran proxies even while Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was nowhere to be found? How did it happen? Joe Biden must have gone down to the Pentagon himself and really smashed some heads together and said, hey, guys, come on, man, you guys get this done. Except, of course, the illegitimate Biden regime, they didn't even know Lloyd Austin was missing. Oh, they're so in control, so legitimate. And they definitely, definitely received 81 million real lawful American votes and are a legitimate presidential administration. No agreement was reached, however, and within hours after Mr. McGurk left the meeting with the Iranians, the United States led military strikes on January 11th on multiple Houthi targets in Yemen. In early February, the United States launched strikes on Iranian-linked military bases in Iraq and Syria in retaliation for the killing of three American service members in an attack by Iraqi militia close to Iran. And it is always three American service members killed in each one of these incidents. Now, I'm not trying to make light of American service members dying in the line of duty. I absolutely do not want to give that impression. But if we do not apply extreme skepticism to all of these claims because it seems like we would be insulting someone by doubting them, then we are giving the mainstream media, the global regime, and its propaganda mouthpieces carte blanche to tell us and make us believe whatever they want, so long as they attach some emotional trigger that will back us down for fear of being accused of insensitivity to people we should hold in high esteem. And I personally am going to have none of that. But let's jump forward to this. From yesterday in Politico, Iran ramps up threats against Israel following consulate airstrike. Iranian officials reiterated threats of retaliation Wednesday against Israel following an airstrike Monday that killed seven Iranian officials and destroyed its consulate in Syria. In a statement made on Iranian state television Wednesday, President Ibrahim Raisi said the attack, quote, will not remain without an answer, end quote. And in both a televised statement and in posts to his social media, Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei warned that Israel, quote, will be punished. With God's help, we will make the Zionists repent of their crime of aggression against the Iranian consulate in Damascus, Khamenei wrote in a separate message in Hebrew, posted to his English language account on X, formerly known as Twitter. Monday's strike came amid continued fire exchanged by Iran-backed Hezbollah and Israeli defense forces along Israel's northern border with Lebanon, and ignited an outcry as it marked a significant escalation in Israel's regional operations and broke with international norms about attacking embassies. So the global regime's Zionist proxy state in Israel, not the biblical Israel, not the Jewish people, not the people of Israel, but the global regime's Zionist proxy state in Israel attacked a consulate in Damascus in response to the paragliding go-kart incident from 6 months ago. And you have to remember, the only way to make sense of this is that the paragliding go-kart incident gave Israel carte blanche to kill indiscriminately whoever they want, as many people as they want, wherever they want, for as long as they want, just to avoid another Holocaust. That is the argument that is actually being made to the people of the world. The IDF said Wednesday that it was bolstering its aerial defense unit and calling up more reservists as tensions increased between Israel and Iran. In his social media posts Wednesday, Khamenei also sought to drum up quote-unquote international outcry against Israel in the lead-up to the International Quds, or Jerusalem, Day on Friday. First introduced by then-leader Ayatollah Ruhollah Khamenei in the immediate aftermath of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Quds Day is now marked with protests by various supporters of Palestinians worldwide. Iran also announced Wednesday that the funerals of the two generals and five officials killed by Monday's IDF strike in Damascus would take place as part of Friday's Quds Day protests in Tehran, where IRGC commander Major General Hossein Salami is set to deliver remarks. And finally, let's go to this from Breitbart yesterday. Israel faces color revolution as opposition protests. Gantz wants new elections. Now, the Israeli color revolution is something we've been talking about for a year. The color revolution, of course, is the global regime's strategy to destabilize and then infiltrate and then control nations all around the world. They have launched them all over the place, including right here in the United States in 2020. That is what we faced. That is what the BLM, Antifa, domestic terrorism was all about. They needed a justification. They created a justification with that George Floyd video, then with the Breonna Taylor video and the Jacob Blake video. None of those stories were true. And on the basis of those false flag events, we were told that a well-organized, well-funded domestic terrorism campaign was entirely justified. And not only that, if any of them were imprisoned at any point, they should be immediately let out. Looting, assaults, the burning down of cities, murders, rapes, the taking over of certain sections of cities, all of that was just fine because of racism. And then they stole an election because of the pandemic. That's a color revolution. They've been facing one in Israel as well to remove Benjamin Netanyahu from his position and to essentially hand control of their government over to the Supreme Court. But let's get into the article. Israel faces the prospect of a U.S.-backed color revolution in the middle of its war against Hamas terrorists in Gaza, as the opposition backs street protests against government and a key cabinet minister has demanded new elections. A color revolution is a coup d'etat accomplished through mass protests targeting the existing government, elected or not, with the assistance of the media. And usually with backing from foreign powers, including the United States. So the global regime and its propaganda media destabilize and overthrow countries and their legitimately elected leaders. This is quite literally the program of George Soros for decades and decades. This is why Soros and the Open Society Foundation have been completely thrown out of countries and had their bank accounts removed, seized, frozen. For the 6 months since the October 7 attack, Israel had seen remarkable unity with protests, mostly centered in Tel Aviv, against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's judicial reforms, a distant memory. There were weekly protests in favor of a deal to release the Israeli hostages from Hamas custody, but organizers were careful to steer clear of electoral politics, and the decision to reach a deal was not entirely in Israel's own hands. But in early March, U.S. intelligence agencies released an assessment that stated, "We expect large protests demanding Netanyahu's resignation and new elections. A different, more moderate government is a possibility." Why would U.S. intelligence be encouraging that? That news emerged just days after War Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz suddenly visited the U.S. for talks with Biden administration officials. So the representative of the Israeli faction attempting to take power through a color revolution is meeting with the illegitimate president of the United States. Got it. Gantz leads an opposition party that joins Netanyahu's government in an emergency government of national unity, but he also remains Netanyahu's main political rival. Gantz reportedly did not clear his trip to the U.S. with Netanyahu beforehand. A few days after the U.S. intelligence assessment emerged, another rival to Netanyahu, Gideon Saar, left Gantz's party, suggesting the possibility of renewed domestic political turmoil. Then U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer delivered a bizarre speech demanding new elections in Israel to oust Netanyahu. President Joe Biden backed Schumer, calling for regime change in Israel and not Iran. Meanwhile, in Israel, the issue of drafting ultra-Orthodox men into the Israel Defense Forces emerged as a political issue, with the left-wing judiciary saying that religious scholars could no longer be exempted from the draft. That decision, in turn, threatened to bring down Netanyahu's government as religious parties opposed the draft. And consider what would happen if the political opposition was conscripted into the military and then assigned to go fight somewhere. Could they simply be blown up? Oh, whoops. Sorry, guys. It's unfortunate that this particular battle didn't go our way, but the good news is at least we have no more political opposition. Consider for a second that that might be why the global regime chooses countries to go to war and then takes their brave and patriotic citizens and sends them to foreign shores to die. But that's not what World War II was. It can't be. And it's not what Vietnam was either. And it's definitely not what Afghanistan is. It's also, for sure, definitely not what's happening in Ukraine right now. Meanwhile, hostage protests and left-wing political protests began to merge. And last week, a four-day protest began, not in Tel Aviv, but in Jerusalem, with tens of thousands of Israelis demonstrating outside Netanyahu's office. A tent city, with most of the tents curiously identical, went up at the site, with protesters occupying the area, demanding new elections. Former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, a key figure in leading last year's protests, who had also called for Israelis to besiege the Knesset, or parliament, in February, gave a speech there, demanding elections now. Remember when there were all those tent cities in 2020 throughout that summer of love? Oh, all those homeless people, all those Antifa. They legitimately created outdoor encampments to house their foot soldiers in a color revolution, and we were like, oh, those poor homeless. And on Wednesday, Gantz held a press conference on his own demanding that new elections be held in September. Notably, Schumer rushed to congratulate Gantz. He said, when a leading member of Israel's war cabinet calls for early elections and over 70% of the Israeli population agrees, according to a major poll, you know it's the right thing to do. Ah, yeah. Publish one poll and that means you get to overthrow the country. Originally, Gantz had criticized Schumer for meddling in Israel's internal politics. But now he has vindicated Schumer, who is taking a victory lap and will keep the pressure on. The political crisis is taking place against the backdrop of growing international pressure on Israel, with the Biden administration opposing Israel's plans to destroy the last Hamas battalions in the city of Rafah, and with the White House slamming Israel for a mistaken airstrike on an aid convoy. Oh, whoops! The Israeli Defense Forces just accidentally killed someone else again. It is suddenly possible that Netanyahu could be toppled, just as the Biden administration wanted, with unclear consequences for Israel's ongoing war in Gaza. In addition, Israel faces growing threats from the north, from Hezbollah, the east, from terror in the Palestinian Authority-controlled areas of the West Bank, and Iraqi militias, and the south, from the Houthis, all fueled by the Iranian regime. Yes, Iran is responsible for all of these attacks on Israel, but also, the United States and its allies are legitimately launching a color revolution to overthrow Benjamin Netanyahu. It's all Iran's fault, though. Consider all of this today in the context and through the lens of devolution and the story, as the mainstream media describes it, that doesn't make sense in any way if Joe Biden was the legitimate president of the United States of America and legitimately wielded the power of that office, including control over the greatest military the world has ever seen. It makes no sense that way. It makes absolute, complete, and total, obvious, clear sense understanding devolution and understanding the good twin, evil twin, faction relationship, that being how the world is divided. It's not country versus country. It is the global regime versus the decentralized sovereign alliance. And the global regime is not in control. What they are doing right now is attempting to hold on to their Zionist proxy state in Israel. And I think that very few things could be more obvious. When you then consider that their justification for everything they are attempting to do is on the basis of the paragliding go-karts, after seeing how the rest of these situations have evolved, you would have to be insane to accept the normie explanation. So I might suggest that maybe you give the conspiracy theory a chance. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/imyourmoderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/imyourmoderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com, or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/imyourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's happening!